Welcome to Advanced Nuclear, the official podcast of UCAN Power, where leading experts, innovators, and policymakers explore the latest developments shaping the future of nuclear energy.
Welcome to a special edition of the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Howe for UCAN Power. Thank you for listening in. Today we're talking with Lee Robinson, the Chief Operating Officer of General Matter, an up-and-coming provider of enriched uranium for the nuclear industry. General Matter is a relatively new company, and as is often the case for companies emerging in stealth mode, they've not been able to share much detail about their business aside from providing enrichment services in the future. We recorded this special episode because Lee has some important news to share about General Matter and their deployment plans. While he's with us, we'll also dive into the background of the company and how it expects to bring value to the nuclear industry. As we all know, there's no nuclear power without nuclear fuel. The nuclear fuel industry was born in the United States, and the U.S. provided most of the free world's nuclear fuel supply for decades. But more recently, this leadership role has been ceded to foreign providers. For uranium mining, conversion, and enrichment, what once was American dominance has withered away. This was particularly true for the most technologically challenging segment of the nuclear fuel supply chain, enrichment. Today, more than two-thirds of the uranium that fuels America's fleet of 94 gigawatt-scale light-water reactors was enriched overseas, including a fifth of that supply coming from, of all places, Russia. Fortunately, Congress has passed legislation to phase out all imports of Russian enriched uranium, and the nuclear industry is ramping up to bridge this production gap. Enter General Matter, one of several companies looking to fill that void, in particular to support Generation 4 reactors that require higher assays of enriched uranium. We'll explore the company's vision and focus in this conversation. Our guest is a founding member of General Matter, where as Chief Operating Officer, he leads finance, security, and government affairs operations for the company. Lee Robinson has a unique and varied background. Before joining General Matter, he was the Deputy Director and co-founder of the Energy Portfolio at the Department of Defense's Defense Innovation Unit, the DIU. In that role, he was responsible for launching the majority of DIU's 35 energy projects, including the innovative microreactor initiative now known as AMPI, Advanced Nuclear Power for Installations, in 2024. Prior to DIU, Lee worked at Bridgewater Associates, advising some of Europe's largest institutional investors on strategic asset allocation. He began his investment career in private credit, leading middle market transactions across the energy and manufacturing sectors. He also served in the U.S. Army as an intelligence officer. He holds a bachelor's degree from Pace University and an MBA from Fordham University. He's also a chartered financial analyst, charter holder. So, Lee, thank you so much for joining us on this special edition of the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. We're grateful you chose our show to talk about the latest developments with General Matter.
Jim, thank you for having me, and thank you for that introduction. I'm very excited about this conversation.
Well, great. So before we get to your announcement, let's set the stage. You have a fascinating professional history at DIU in the Army and in the private sector. How did you get involved with General Matter?
Yeah, so let's see. As you mentioned, I was over at Defense Innovation Unit. And for those that are not familiar with Defense Innovation Unit, the entire reason why it exists is because the Defense Department and largely the federal government operates off of technology that it develops internally, which means that when we need a widget, we've got to come up with the basic science for that widget and then run it through this 10 to 20 year process to actually get that widget out into the field. That worked great in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, really even into the mid 80s. But that doesn't really work great when you have great commercial technologies like the iPhone that took billions of dollars of commercial dollars to develop, but needs to get out into the federal government. And we didn't have a process for it. So DIU was birthed in 2015 to do exactly that. Why should we redevelop an iPhone from scratch when we can buy an iPhone and customize it? And that actually, that process works really well for a lot of other technologies, especially energy technologies, where there's a massive amount of private sector venture capital or even all the way through private equity dollars going to develop new technologies and deploy new technologies. Why not do that also for the energy domain, whether it be batteries, synthetic fuels, or maybe even a microreactor? So I was working, I helped stand up the energy portfolio at DIU. And I was working on the diligence for the Army for putting microreactors onto our defense installations. We've got 500 of them all around the world. They look like little towns. Great places for a first-of-a-kind deployment because we have serious resilience issues at each of those locations. So I was going through all the diligence, and I kept hearing from people. There's this one investor that you have to talk to. Every single one of the advanced reactor companies, they all know this investor. They're all more or less chasing this investor to be on their cap table. You got to go talk to Scott Nolan. Scott's the one that's been basically in the nuclear space as a venture capitalist, leading Founders Fund, which is one of the premier tier one VCs, leading Founder Fund effort on energy tech. So I was put in touch with him by a partner from Founders Fund, by a great candidate for those Army reactor projects. And then also at the exact same time, Scott was looking for somebody to talk to in the government space to figure out how he could fuel the micro reactors, because he was seeing that the uranium supply chain was just a total mess. So he was trying to figure out, does the government have an ability to fuel this? So we were almost within the exact same week. People were telling Scott, you got to go talk to Lee because he's leading this project. And then people were telling me, you got to go talk to Scott if you want to know how the investors are thinking about it. And that led to, I want to say sometime just shortly after Labor Day, maybe around the end of September, to Scott of 2023, Scott and I having a meeting at the Defense Innovation Unit's headquarters in Mountain View, California, where it was supposed to be like a 20-minute meet and greet. It turned into a 3-hour whiteboard session where we mapped out the entire uranium supply chain. It led to me then having a bunch of Defense Department conversations about, is it really as bad as we think it is? And what that turned into was me deciding I got to go get off active duty. I have to basically resign from DIU, and I got to go fix this supply chain with Scott, because if we don't, nobody else is going to do it. So Jim, maybe a little bit of a long-winded answer of how did I come to General Matter, but it's because Scott showed me just how severe the uranium supply chain was, or at least started it. And it became this brain worm for me that I had to go figure out. And what I found was it's just as bad as he said, it's possibly even worse, and no one's going to solve it without us.
And so that's your catalyst for forming the company. You found a need and you decided to fill it. That's the American way, right? So congratulations to you on that. And you're headquartered in, is it Mountain View or elsewhere in the Bay Area?
We're headquartered in Los Angeles. Okay. So, our headquarters is down in Los Angeles, and there's a reason for that. So, when we first started the company, we weren't sure where we were going to place ourselves. And we're a nuclear focused company. We're an enrichment service company. It's engineering at the heart of the company. I think I'm actually still the only non-engineer, and Scott usually corrects me when I say that. And he says, no, he's a financial engineer. I don't think that's actually a thing. But inside the company, you know, it's entirely engineers, and it's mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, chemical engineers, and nuclear engineers. So we were looking for where in the world is the bright center of the universe initially for nuclear engineering. And what we found was there is no bright center of the universe for nuclear engineering. It's actually very decentralized across the entire country. There's pockets of it in the Pacific Northwest. There's pockets of it in Idaho. There's pockets of it in New Mexico and in Tennessee, all kind of focused a little bit around either academic landscapes or about the national labs. But what we saw was, well, we don't actually need that much nuclear engineering for what we're going to do. And the bright center of the universe for everything else is Los Angeles. And it's a specific part of Los Angeles. Everything south of the airport. If you're familiar with the landscape of Los Angeles County, the airport cuts it right in the middle. And everything south of Los Angeles County is not what, I'm an East Coast guy, I'm from the New York area. It's not what the New York area thinks of Los Angeles. New York area thinks of Los Angeles as Hollywood. That's the north. The south is grit. It's the port. It's the space industry. It's people building stuff. It's guys that are into hot rods. And what we found was that's where you got to be. You have to be in the center of all this mechanical engineers. The technician talent is terrific. Best part of the country if you're going to design something. So yeah, long way also of saying, Jim, we're based in LA.
You know, I was recently out there and visiting one of the advanced reactor, micro reactor companies, and literally I jumped in an Uber and was at another microreactor company about 5 minutes later, and going past all the big defense contractors and the space contractors, you know, SpaceX was just right next door in Hawthorne. I mean, it's a really, you know, it's a really impressive area. The the brain power there must be, you know, maybe that's what's going to eventually sink California into the ocean, is the brain power, too many heavy brains. But so as far as your value proposition, what is it? What is the value proposition for General Matter for the nuclear industry?
Yeah, so this is one of those unique industries that it must be American. Like our great grandfathers developed all these technologies for nuclear power industry. Then basically our grandfathers industrialized it, and something happened in our father's generation where they let the entire thing go overseas. But you know what? It's up to our generation to bring it back before it's too late. This has to be it's American technology. It has to be American production. It's got to be American led. So one thing of General Matter is we are American. We're American all the way through, from our investors all the way down to every single person that works inside the company. And even actually through a lot of our supply chain, we focus on our supply chain really being an entirely American supply chain. Most of it is actually right around the corner. So one is American. The second is we're going to be commercial. And what commercial means is you're able to produce at scale, on time, and at a low cost. So those two things, that's what leads to American dominance in an industry. One is that you focus on bringing it home, and then the other is you focus on making it as inexpensive for your clients as possible so that they're not worried about the fuel supply for when they're trying to deploy reactors. That should be something where the box is just checked. In fact, I think right now reactor companies, appropriately so, are spending a lot of brain power on where am I going to get my fuel from? And if we're successful, they don't have to spend that brain power on fuel. They can spend that brain power on where else am I going to deploy my reactors?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, it's probably the longest pole in the tent for most of the Generation 4 companies. If they're not using 5% or low enriched, you know, they've got a real challenge right now getting their supply chain lined up. So I know they're very glad to hear that your focus is on the HALEU. We'll talk about that more in a second. I did want to just ask one more kind of, you know, foundational question, and that is, you know, Scott is a SpaceX guy, and SpaceX has a certain mentality towards, you know, development. How does that affect what you're doing at General Matter?
Yeah, I mean, all of the lessons learned, there's probably two schools of thought that sit in General Matter. They're both foundational to who Scott is. Scott is a SpaceX guy, and he's a Founders Fund guy. And if your listeners are not familiar with Founders Fund, Founders Fund is probably the, in my eyes, the best VC. And I can say that because I wasn't ever a member of Founders Fund. So the best VC in the history of venture capital. Started in the early 2000s by Peter Thiel. Peter was just incredible at identifying great opportunities and helping those opportunities prosper. So like Facebook, outside investor in Facebook. SpaceX, first outside investor in SpaceX. Incubated and founded Palantir. Incubate Anduril, the next great defense prime. Like, these are not small feats. What Founders Fund does is they know how to both start companies, support early stage companies. So we have that culture as part of the company. But then also you look at the SpaceX culture. The SpaceX culture is this engineering focused culture that operates on the like fast iteration. And the whole system is designed around this fast iteration to get a complex piece of engineering deployed as quickly as possible. That is embedded in our org chart. It's embedded in how we hire people. And then also the nice part is because of where we're located, we're basically right on top of where SpaceX has the center of their R&D in the southern part of LA. The nice part is that the recruiting, it's mostly people with SpaceX backgrounds. SpaceX haven't been around for about 25 years. It means there's a lot of SpaceX alumni that are in the area, and they're some of the greatest engineers probably in the history of engineering.
Well, if you are as successful as SpaceX, congratulations. They're an incredible company, and in the technical feats that they've pulled off, you know, watching that huge rocket come back down to Earth and get caught by those grabber arms is something that's literally breathtaking. So good luck. But look, drum roll, please. Let's talk about your announcement. What's happening with general matter that's that you want to talk to our audience about?
Yeah. So general matter, we are going to be announcing on Tuesday, August 5th. Our first, the plans for our first enrichment facility. And this is America's first U.S.-owned, privately developed enrichment facility in the history of enrichment. This is a this is a technology that, if you're familiar with the term dual use, this has a little bit of a different flavor of dual use, right? So dual use, typically how I know of it, is it's a commercial technology that gets that has potentially government purposes for the offtake. How we're viewing it as dual use, or at least in the history of enrichment, how it's been dual use, is it's been a government technology with commercial offtake. So this has always been a state-owned enterprise-led capability. So that's why having the private sector do it for the first time, really there's only one analogy in the history of industry, and that's SpaceX doing it for space launch. And we're going to be announcing our first plant ever. It's in Paducah, Kentucky. And the purpose of this plant is to get America more self-sufficient on enrichment, which means, like you mentioned in the opener, those Russian imports, this plant is going to push out those Russian imports and do it in an incredibly aggressive timeline. We're trying to get this going by the end of the decade. We want to be able to push out those Russian imports.
So enrichment plant in Paducah. Why did you choose Paducah?
Paducah is an incredible community. And I mean that in many, many different ways. I've known them actually for the better part of about 15 years. So when I started my career, I was in private credit, largely lending to what's called the middle market, which is companies that are range between 50 million in revenues to about 2 billion in revenues. And I focused on hardware, people that have a lot of assets to deploy. And it was an interesting part. It was an interesting era for the world, because I started my career before the Great Recession, and then the Great Recession hit. And what I found was I was the junior guy in my private credit office, where everybody else had basically been pushed out. And I ended up running the office. And one of my first deals right in the tail ends of the Great Recession was James Marine, which is the largest employer in Paducah, Kentucky. This is around 2010. They're a tugboat company. So basically, if you have shipments going up and down the Mississippi, they're the guys that are pulling those barges up and down. So a lot of hardware right inside the business. So I spent more than a few visits out in Paducah as pretty young financial guy. And I saw exactly what this town had to bear. This town was right in the center of these major waterways. And it had an incredible workforce that was focused on these pretty hard tech industries. I didn't know at the time, but just to the west was this enormous Department of Energy site that was called the Paducah Gaseous Diffusion Plant. And then what I've also found out since then is that it's a community that speaks largely with one voice, because they more or less know exactly what they need to get their community to prosper. So what I found since then is that this gaseous diffusion plant is one of the gems of the American industrialization of the nuclear industry. So in the mid-50s, the Department of Energy identified this site to industrialize enrichment. So initial enrichment was down in Tennessee for, say, the Manhattan Project. During the early part of the Cold War, we needed to build it for our commercial reactors. Almost all of our enrichment was happening inside of Paducah for our commercial reactors. And this is when we went from zero commercial reactors to 110 commercial reactors, providing over 20% of the power to our electric grid. And all of it really happened at Paducah, Kentucky. In fact, I like to think that we probably won the Cold War because of Paducah, Kentucky. Because we won the Cold War because we had the cheapest electricity to prosper our manufacturing industries and grow our economy. Well, that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for this massive site that was employing thousands of people in Kentucky. Unfortunately, when the industry, when we decided as a nation that we weren't going to prioritize this industry and it went overseas, the unfortunate thing that happened is it meant that site was going to get decommissioned. So for the last nearly 20 years, it's been in a form of decommissioning, slowly pulling down these buildings that were, you know, that were built to house these massive machines. It's really sad that billions of dollars is basically now turning into a decommissioning process, which certainly needs to happen. But we have this fantastic location that's got an enormous amount of infrastructure going to it, both human and physical infrastructure going into it, and it's not getting reindustrialized. And that's what the community brought to us, and that's what the DOE brought to us. And we saw that, and we're like, this is ideal. Absolutely ideal for an enrichment site. I mean, you have the place where we industrialized enrichment. Why not be the place where we reindustrialize enrichment, where we commercialize enrichment? So that's why we're going to Paducah.
Well, I'll tell you, the workforce there, about the same time that you got to know and love Paducah is about the same time I got to know and love Paducah, and you will not find a better workforce. I mean, they're as good as it comes in America, just really loyal Americans with a really great work ethic, and they're very savvy when it comes to uranium enrichment. I mean, there's generations of people who've been doing that. We used to have people working for us at USEC, now Centris, that were third generation uranium enrichers. And so they're there. Those families are, a lot of them are still there. So you're going to be working on enrichment, but I think initially you're going to start with the higher assay. Is that correct? The HALEU? I know you were selected for that award by the Department of Energy for HALEU enrichment. Is that your primary focus of this plant, or you're going to do LEU as well? Or
so the beauty of enrichment is that once you have an enrichment technology, the technology remains the exact same, regardless of what's called, for your listeners, assay, which just means what percentage of enrichment you're going to. So if you have, a box that does enrichment to get it up to 1%, that same box can get it up to 5%, can get it up to 19.75%, which is the peak for the HALEU, like you mentioned, Jim. So for us, developing that capability, then it's really about how you orient that capability inside of a building. This plant right now is initially focused on LEU, although there is a potential to also bring on HALEU inside of the footprint that we have. But right now, the entire focus is we need to supply LEU for the 94 reactors all around the country that are in like potential shortage territory by the end of the decade. So that's the focus. Let's keep the lights on in America with this plant.
Gotcha. And so how about that in-between material? They call it LEU plus, between 5 and 10%. Are you focused on that as well? I would assume yes, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Yes. And the beauty of if you build a HALEU plant, you can orient the HALEU plant so that it does have a product of LEU plus.
Right. And so this is actually news because I think the industry is expecting that you would go for HALEU exclusively first and not the LEU. And I know the LEU market's very tight between now and the end of the decade. And, you know, you do have some expansion from the European companies and others wanting to get into the business. But I think you're going to have a pretty rabid customer base lining up because it's a very tight market right now. So speaking of that, you know, none of this comes for free. You have to have pretty significant upfront CapEx, capital expenses to build a plant. With your design philosophy, do you think you can lower the CapEx needed, you know, for traditional enrichment plant, or how's that working?
Yeah, Jim, I'll say if we didn't think that we could do this for less than what it has historically been done, we wouldn't have started the company. So there's a great book that Peter Thiel wrote called Zero to One. In fact, I think Scott may have helped him on it because it was written on the heels of him doing a Stanford course in the like 2009, 2010 era. And Zero to One is all about how do you start a company. It is really about the birth of PayPal from the late 90s. But he's got some excellent anecdotes and then lessons learned on how you start a company, one of which is you need to have an order of magnitude reduction of cost or order of magnitude improvement of capability. In this case, we're producing effectively a commodity, right? There's an ASTM to LEU. So we're not going to make a better version of LEU, right? Because it's got an ASTM to it. So we have to have a way of reducing the cost by roughly an order of magnitude. And that's everything about the focus of General Matter. It's safe and reliable and inexpensive. Like you'll see, we're finding ways of of lowering the cost in our engineering all the way through in our deployment, and doing it in a way that in many cases improves the safety. And that's just the unfortunate nature of, I think, what has happened in an industry where there hasn't been a lot of pressure from new entrants in an industry. So there hasn't been a lot of movement to redesigning something. I mean, the majority of this industry, Jim, was designed before the personal computer. I think most people are operating off technology that was designed before the personal computer. So in those cases, you're missing out on many things that just from like compute power, you should be able to redesign it for a lower cost and improved capability. So yes, we're planning on, it is going to be an expensive endeavor. In fact, the announcements on our plant, this is a roughly $1.5 billion expenditure expected over the course of roughly the next 5 years.
And the fundraising is going apace. Is that safe to say?
Yes. I mean, this is something that I think there's very few investments out there that have the Venn diagram overlaps so well here. You have something with a great market. I mean, our market is utilities that are also fantastic partners in this. The advanced reactor companies that everyone knows they're the future. Like anybody that is saying that they're not the future, I don't know what they're looking at in America, but everyone knows the advanced reactor deployers, those are the future. So you've got this excellent market that's either brand new getting started or in existence. You've got pretty good economics if you can lower the cost of CapEx. In fact, I think very strong economics can lower the cost of CapEx. And then you have this national security element of if we do not do this, the geopolitical landscape is so much worse for America. And in the dead center of that are investors. And the equity investors, especially the venture capital community, this is directly what they're looking for. From what I understand, not being a venture capitalist myself, so this hits exactly what they're there. And the equity markets have been incredibly supportive for us and other members in the industry. I think the debt markets, we have to prove that you can build, and you can build on time, and you can build on the cost that you're expecting. And once we and a few other people start doing that, then you'll see the debt markets come. And once that happens, then it's, you know, American capitalism off to the races.
Gotcha. So I know there's parts of this you probably can't talk about yet. It might be still business sensitive, but I'm going to ask anyway. So your website says, quote, you know, you're going to deploy a, quote, novel, scalable, cost competitive technology, unquote. Can you tell us about the technology?
We're not announcing our technology direction, but we've known our technology direction from the get-go. Again, this is all part of, you don't start a business unless you know you can reduce the cost by an order of magnitude or improve the capability by an order of magnitude. So we've known our technology approach from the very start. This general matter is not scientists. We're not lab coats. We're probably closer to mechanics than we are to PhDs. So because of that, we're not talking about something that's deep inside of a lab that's going to take 20 years to deploy. So we're not looking for leap ahead in physics, right? We're talking about something that can be engineered for cost, which means we're talking about high TRL technology readiness level for your listeners, high TRL technology.
Gotcha. And will you be manufacturing it yourself, or is this going to be outsourced to a different company?
Designed, manufactured, and operated all by General Matter. And that is a key lesson learned from SpaceX. In fact, I'm pretty sure SpaceX guys did not want to vertically integrate to start, but they found that they had to because the industry almost required it. It was just lack of faith in the rest of the industry, or they had to effectively co-op other parts of the aerospace industry into doing space technology. So yes, we're taking that exact same approach that we have to do design, manufacturer of our core capability, and operate it ourselves.
And it's interesting. It's a little bit counterintuitive to the casual observer because you say, hey, why not just go to someone who knows how to build stuff already? You don't have to do all the tooling and, you know, get up to speed. But at the same time, you have to give them enough money for them to make a profit. So that's an added kind of loss to you. So what you're saying is you bring it in-house. It's worked for SpaceX. So again, back to that SpaceX mentality, that's a pretty interesting path forward. And we wish you luck with that. And I'm assuming then you'll be manufacturing in the U.S.
That's right. That's right. Manufacturing, designing in the U.S., manufacturing in the U.S., operating in the U.S., all by U.S. personnel. And Jim, on your point, you nailed it. Like, if as soon as you send something out of house, you lose control of it. And losing control of it usually means two factors you lose control of. One, you lose control of the schedule. And schedule is expensive. And the second thing you lose control of is the cost. So you've got for the things that are core to the business, they have to be done in-house.
I am in violent agreement with that. So because it's built in the U.S. and it sounds like you get a pretty significantly U.S. supply chain, do you think you'll meet the threshold of being unobligated so it could be used for national security missions?
Obligation is such an interesting animal. It's a foreign word to a lot of other people. So what, just for everybody, what obligation means is defense needs. So submarines, aircraft carriers, weapon systems, all of the uranium has to be produced in America, refined in America with American technology. And it means your supply chain has to also be an American technology. Or if it is, some parts of it imported from a country that is okay with it going to those defense uses. So enrichment is a core piece of that, right? Everything that you do must be American. Otherwise, it's going to come with what's called a peaceful use obligation. So just to be very clear, we're not going to be enriching beyond 19.75, but, and those submarines work off a much higher assay, but what we're producing can go into a government system that takes it from 19.75 up to whatever is needed for the submarines and aircraft carriers. Our aim is to be unobligated as quickly as possible. There are certain core items in the in enrichment, not so much on our core device, but really on like the systems, like valves, as an example, that come from certain European suppliers, and they're maybe the only supplier in the world. So we're looking at those and we're seeing how do we make it so that that core supply at some point is unobligated. We believe we have a route to get to unobligated production by the end of the decade, but it is first get operational first and then bring it into unobligated operations. And here's really the unique learning that we've had over the last year. When you can find an American supplier, it usually means it is less expensive and better capability. And that, I think, most people do not realize unless they look at it directly. Most people, I think, and this is I'm saying most people because this is what I thought beforehand. When I was, you know, the New York guy that was doing private credit, I thought, oh, American supply, of course, is going to be more expensive. And, you know, American supply relative to certain other countries, maybe it's not quite as capable. That's not true. And it's not even like a small amount of discount when you find a good American supplier. Usually it means you might be getting something that's like 50% discount. So push, I would say for every nuclear company, push your supply chain to go American because it's not just for patriotism, it's actually for bottom line. So why not get both?
Well, that's another area of violent agreement. That's a really good one. And for our listeners, it's important to note that even if you know, when they become unobligated, you know, by the turn of the decade, that's great. But the government business will be much, much smaller in comparison to the commercial business, which doesn't require any obligations whatsoever. So that's really important. So the commercial side, you're perfectly free to use whatever parts and pieces you want. As far as the supply chain goes, though, are you seeing any shortages? Like the post-COVID world has seen all sorts of, you know, advanced metals and, you know, specialty metals have gone way up in price. Has that been a real drag on you, or is that something that you're able to get around?
There are certain, we've got a list of supply chains that we refer to as supply chains of concern. There are certain supply chains where it is certainly something that we're watching. What we haven't seen is in any of these supply chains that it's impossible to hit our timelines, or it's going to be 10x what it normally is. In fact, in many cases, we're seeing some of the more general supply chains to be the ones that we're most worried about. So like transformers, We are going to be requiring a decent amount of electricity. We're going to have to build a substation, at our site. So we're going to be reliant on transformers just like everybody else. If you want to build a data center, you're pretty reliant on transformers. I think that market is getting a lot better than it was 2 years ago. Luckily, we're post-COVID enough where those certain markets like that are improving. But yeah, those are the areas that we're probably the most hyper-focused on. Other areas, it could be limiting when we're talking about certain volumes, but it won't hold us from operational.
Right. And so, because of your expertise in not just enrichment, but in other areas of tech development, especially with your DIU work, how do you see like advances in AI and material science, additive manufacturing? How does this all kind of come together to help you at General Matter produce the better product and the quicker and the cheaper product?
Yeah, it actually it improves productivity across basically every domain. It improves productivity on your ability to iterate, whether it be more of the hardware side of like sensors and being able to evaluate your capability in prototyping, but also in then in production. It improves your capability on being able to evaluate your own designs. Improves capability on being able to evaluate regulation. This is a very regulated environment. So you want to be able to have that AI partner there to be able to poke out certain items on regulation, and not so that you rely on it, but that it supports you on pointing out things that you might not have otherwise seen. Because what I've found is the way most of the regulated industries, and not this is not just the nuclear industry. This is actually having dealt with many other regulated industry, to include aviation, to include a lot of transportation-oriented industries. Many of those industries rely on multiple humans in the loop to identify where something either could go wrong or is going wrong, and those humans in the loop are the biggest sources of error. When you have an AI agent that can sit next to you, it doesn't mean you got to reduce the humans in the loop, but it actually makes those humans in the loop much more productive. So I think the beauty of the last couple years of development is that it's going to make everybody safer. And it's going to make everybody probably iterate a lot faster.
Well, both of those are good things, right? And so we'll take that and put it in the bank. So how about supply chain? Are there any partnerships that you've announced yet? And also, what's your work with the national labs? Are you collaborating with any of the labs?
So we are collaborating. I'll hit the second one first. On the national labs, we are collaborating with Idaho National Laboratory. They've been an excellent partner. We've been in discussions. Actually, Scott has been in discussions with them about enrichment since 2022. So I want to say there was a person at the national lab that seeded the idea in Scott's mind during a trip up to INL. And that, led to another brainworm that turned into General Matter. So we've been in both in discussions and receiving some advice on just how to get going, because we initially were not nuclear engineers, so we're coming into it from a very fresh perspective. And then they have been great partners with us formally to help us evaluate our capabilities. We mostly focus on them telling us. We show them this is our technology, and then telling us, well, have you thought about doing it slightly this way? Have you thought about testing in that way? And that's really I view it as the best place for subject matter expertise from a national lab. Bring them in to help evaluate your capabilities. Don't throw something over the fence and ask them to make something that's not really a good use case for a national lab. And the second thing is infrastructure. National labs have some of the best infrastructure in the country for developing first-of-a-kind technologies. So our expectation is that our devices are first going to get tested up at INL, because they know how to control the rest of the system really well. In fact, they're probably going to control the rest of the system, 5x beyond what you would normally see in a production environment, because it's unnecessary to do that in a production environment. So, yes, Idaho National Laboratory, fantastic partners. On supply chain, I'd say our engineering supply chain, it's the LA area, the LA area from LAX down really into Orange County, into like Huntington Beach. It's the best set of machine shops in basically the entire country. So that's where, while we're not announcing any formal partnerships with anybody in that area, there's no shortage of companies that we've been working with down here that have just been excellent partners, getting us things that are probably a little bit unusual on an extreme timeline. And they're good at it because most of them are working also for SpaceX.
Right, right. So you're going to be up and running hopefully by the end of the decade. Do you have a nameplate capacity for the plant that you're able to announce, or is it going to just keep growing over the years as you get more and more business?
So the beauty of enrichment is it's a modular design, modular in chunks, right? You're not adding, there's a certain calculation in enrichment called SWU, separative work unit. You're not adding one SWU at a time, but you're adding, you know, several hundred thousand SWU at a time. And we're going to be growing until we basically run out of space on the property, right? And the aim there is to push out Russian supply into the United States. Right now, they're covering almost 30% of all U.S. enrichment. So 30% of all U.S. enrichment, the U.S. needs 15 million SWU. So do that simple math. That's really the aim for that entire facility.
That's big. That's terrific. Okay. And now on the HALEU side, HALEU is special because it has to be then deconverted using special processes so it can then be fabricated into fuel. And Department of Energy has a deconversion award that they've given out to several companies. Can you see a deconversion facility for HALEU also on that property, or is that something you just kind of ship it as UF6 to the deconverter?
So this is an area where we are deeply focused on enrichment. And as a focus on enrichment, we care about the people that are upstream of us and downstream of us. So upstream of us is conversion, effectively a chemical process that takes yellow cake and turns into what's called UF6. So natural UF6 comes into us, and then we enrich it to bring it up to enriched UF6. And then the enriched UF6 goes out to a deconverter, another chemical process that turns it into UO2. So it would make an enormous amount of sense for a deconverter to site nearby. And for a fuel line, so somebody's got to take that UO2 and turn it into a pellet or a TRISO BB for a fuel line to site nearby. Limit the transportation as much as possible. There's other reasons why conversion and deconversion should be sited near each other, because their biggest issue is they've got to do what's called fluorination. And one puts it in, the other one takes it out. So it'd make a lot of sense for those two to be right next to each other. So the beauty is we have a conversion facility right across the water in Paducah, Kentucky. In Metropolis, Illinois, is a Converdyne Honeywell conversion facility, which supplies something like 2/3 of all of American needs. So why not a deconverter come onto the property or right next door? And we'd be welcome for that. Although I will say that is a segment of the industry where there are fantastic providers already. So Westinghouse and Framatome are terrific providers, Westinghouse being over in South Carolina, Framatome being in Washington State. We think that they probably have a pretty good ability to expand their capability as needed to cover the HALEU deconversion. But if them or somebody else wanted to site next to us in Paducah, we certainly wouldn't say no.
We will look forward to those future announcements. That's all great. So I know you can't talk about this because it's business sensitive, but I'm sure you've been trying to build a customer base. I'm just curious, how has General Matter been received by your potential customers? Are they just kind of saying, you guys don't know what you're doing because you haven't proven it yet, or are they embracing you with open arms?
This customer base, they are, there it's probably some of the best conversations I've ever had with a customer in the history of my like career across finance. And then, my government time, these people know their industry really well. So the core utilities that run the 94 reactors all around the country, they all have these fuel buying teams that just know the uranium industry in and out. And they know where the gaps are, and they know when they see a company that actually could do something that works for them. And I'll say in the last, maybe a little bit longer in 6 months, they have both reached out to us and we've had extremely productive conversations. Because this is another area where we are fine with saying that they're more experienced at the fuel purchasing than we are at fuel selling. So why not have a great early on relationship with certain utilities that just know this extremely well? I'll say there's two utilities that probably stand alone compared to others. Actually, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about them yet, but there are two utilities that we're in pretty deep conversations with, that, that have just been extraordinarily helpful across, like, whether it be flexible on their delivery timelines, sharing information on when their needs are, and then as we're going through the market and seeing other partners, just having a good sounding board.
Yeah, understood. And I can tell you the utility has been terrific in trying to support a diversity of supply in the U.S. They don't want a monopoly. They want to have a diverse set of suppliers. So I think that's one of the reasons why there was so much excitement in industry when General Matter was announced. And now that you've come out of stealth mode and you're able to talk about some of these things now with this big Paducah announcement, I mean, this is all good stuff for the industry, and there's a lot of excitement around it. So let me just, as we come to a close here, you know, as a startup, you know, what are the lessons you've learned so far about breaking into the nuclear fuel industry?
Yeah, come to people in the fuel industry knowing that they know more than you on what they've been focusing on their entire careers, and have that, be humble. So I think where a lot of people get it wrong, especially in the startup community, is they're coming to a new industry and they're saying, I'm going to fix you, industry, and I'm going to do things better than you. And that maybe that's true, but certainly these people know more about their industry than you do. So be humble in the conversation and take advice wherever you can get it. And that is honestly, that's not limited to the nuclear industry. That is what I would say to just about anybody that's starting a new venture. Find the people that are willing to give you that advice and take it. And that is true across government partners. That is true across industry partners. It's Jim, you and I have known each other for 2 years. You have given me fantastic advice on how we should get started. There's like no shortage of people willing to impart that. So just listen to them.
Well, that is sage wisdom there. And, you know, well, I got five kids and none of them listen to me a whole lot. So this is all good to know that somebody does. So thank you. What should we be looking for next from General Matter? I mean, after you know, today's announcement, what's next?
Well, I'll say we're pretty shy on making announcements. We don't like to celebrate things that are not real. So we don't talk about like MOUs as an example. We talk about when things are substantive and are happening and or have happened. So I'd say right now we are deeply focused on getting this Paducah facility online. That is our down and in focus. You may not see much from General Matter for the rest of the year. You may not see much from General Matter for a while, because what we're doing is we're focusing on building. But when we build, maybe then we'll talk about it, but not beforehand.
Got it. So what are your closing thoughts for our audience here today?
I just, Jim, honestly, I appreciate you as an industry leader. There are terrific industry leaders out in the nuclear industry. And to the rest of this community, I'd say nudge people to start new businesses. We need a lot of new blood in this industry. We need new workforce. We need people to join the Department of Energy, to join the NRC. We need people that want to come in and fix, maybe not fix this industry, help this industry grow, make this industry prosper, because all of America is relying on it. If we want energy for whatever reason, AI, manufacturing, you want to clean up our emissions, you're going to go nuclear. The only way is through nuclear fission. So we need a lot more people coming into it. So to all of your listeners, if you're not telling people that are, you know, coming out of school to get into the nuclear world, then you're doing something wrong.
Well, more sage wisdom. And I can't thank you enough. We learned some really important facts today about the company. I can't thank you enough for sharing the you know, information about General Matter, your company's vision for the future. It's really been a pleasure speaking to you. We'll all be waiting to hear more from General Matter. Like you said, it might be a while, but that's okay. We do wish your team all the success in the world to get that production capacity up and running, because, you know, America and the industry really need it. So thank you for being here.
Thanks, Jim. Great talking with you.
My pleasure. Well, folks, that's a wrap for this special edition of the Advanced Nuclear Podcast. We're glad everyone could join us. You know, you can believe that advanced nuclear technologies are key to powering the American economy in the years ahead. If you want to learn more, you can find us on social media and at ucanpower.org. Special thanks to our team at UCAN, and especially Miss Kimberly, our producer, and our podcasting Jedi Master. So until next time, this is your host signing off with thanks to you for tuning in to the Advanced Nuclear Podcast.